Driving it home with Patty Vasquez, Patty Vasquez.
From global conflicts to greenhouse gases, the folks refusing to wear masks says, and politicians getting caught grabbing asses says, she's driving it home with Patty Vasquez.
Hello, hello. I'm having... Yes, can you hear me? Paul? Oh, no. Are we just going
to... No, you're good. Okay. You're good.
Hey, this is Patty Vasquez. Okay, thank you. This is Patty Vasquez. We're driving it home till 7. Unfortunately, I am broadcasting from home. I have been... Look, we all kind of have gotten in the habit of feeling safe when we're out and about, and I have tested positive for COVID. So to be completely safe and make sure my coworkers at WCPT are healthy, I am broadcasting from home. So I apologize for any technical issues. It's all on me. I'm doing the best we can. But we are going to check in with a lot of candidates in this first hour. We're going to start off with one of the biggest races in Cook County. Actually, I would say one of the biggest races in the state of Illinois. We are going to talk to Clayton Harris III, who's on the line with us. Hello, Clayton. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Patty. I hope you have a speedy recovery there.
I appreciate it. I was so sad. I was planning on working on polling places with some of the candidates, but I'm going to watch it from afar now. You have been really out there shaking hands, talking to residents. I know there's a lot in the news. So how are you feeling in these last 12 hours before the polls open tomorrow for the last day of the primary?
I'm feeling really good. We've been at so many polling places around the county, and the feedback that I've been getting has been extremely positive. Our message is resonating, and luckily the lies and the negative media attention that's been coming from those texts and stuff is not resonating with folks. They know that they're not true. So I feel really good. I think that we're positioned really well, and I'm just excited for tomorrow.
It's a long haul. I know it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of managing, the responses to what people want to know the most. And I think what's the top of mind for people is, what is your plan, your primary focus in helping Chicagoans and everyone in Cook County feel safe? What's your top line for that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like that's the right question to be asking. My top line for this is that we're going to hold everybody accountable. We're holding everybody accountable for the actions, but we're holding everybody accountable appropriately. So always people are like, well, what does that mean? That means that we're going to make sure, especially with the nonviolent first-time offenders, that we give them an opportunity to make sure that they don't have a record, a permanent record right there. So we look at diversions. But the individuals that are doing harm to our communities, and when we talk about these smash and grabs, when we talk about anyone using a gun in the commission of a crime, we're going to move forward with prosecutions to make sure that we're holding them accountable for their actions as well. So people can know and should know that with me in as the next state's attorney, that there's going to be certainty in prosecutions.
Last week there was a tragic murder. A young boy was killed trying to protect his mother. Her ex-boyfriend had been released after doing time, and it was a shortened, whatever the sort of guidelines that the parole board uses or the judges uses in sentencing. People want to know about situations like that. They want to know that when someone is sentenced for a violent crime, that once they're released, they aren't going to be out, doing something as horrific and the sad loss of life. This young boy we saw last week and his mother who is pregnant. What do you say to families that are really grieving and for communities that are in shock?
Yeah, that one right there. I mean, Jaden was 11 years old, and I have an 11-year-old, and all this young boy was doing was protecting his mom from an abusive man. And it's the saddest thing ever, especially with the history of this man who committed this crime and the fact that he was just out, one day. So there were clearly some misses there. I think what we need to make sure is that the state's attorney's office, the sheriff's office, and the chief judge are all working together to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. One of the things I want to to make sure, you know, that when I'm the state's attorney, is that we're looking at those wraparound services for women and individuals that are survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, so that something like this doesn't happen, so that they know any movement, if someone is out after they've been threatened or abused by individuals, that they know where they are, and that if there's GPS monitoring, so that if they get within, you know, a mile radius of the victim or the survivor, that police are alerted, so that nothing like this can ever happen again.
There's also been a lot made of your experience and the kind of work that you've done. You have worked in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and you've worked in Springfield. You've worked as a lobbyist. What do you want to tell folks about the breadth of your experiences and how that lends itself to the role of Cook County State's Attorney?
Yes, thank you for that. I think that it's ridiculous to think that because I was a prosecutor back in the 90s, the late 90s and the early 2000s, that I don't understand the office because I haven't been in the courtroom. Anyone who thinks that, it fundamentally misunderstands what the job of the state's attorney is. The state's attorney is not the one who's going to be in the courtroom trying cases. The state's attorney is the one who's going to be managing the assistant state's attorneys who are in the courtroom pleading and prosecuting these cases. The state's attorney has to be a leader, a manager, someone who can get the resources so that the assistant state's attorneys can do the job that they need to do to administer justice. I have done that. I have the chops, especially coming through the state's attorney's office where I did, ending my time in special prosecutions, narcotics. I absolutely intimately understand the office and what it takes to run that office. But now you add in that I have the managerial experience, that I've led large agencies. I've managed staffs of over 5,000 people. I've managed the state of over 60,000 people. I've managed the state during a crisis. You know, I remind people this is the second largest prosecutor's office in the nation. Over 750 attorneys, 400 staff, and another 100 investigators. You need someone who has done this before. And I have. I've led large state agencies, and I've been teaching and lecturing at the University of Chicago public policy, the things that we need in this office, for over 15 years. I am multidimensional, not singularly.
What are some of the things that you intended, like, let's say day one, you come in and there's a change, there's absolutely something you know needs to be changed. What does that look like on day one?
I think that what it looks like on day one is making sure that people know we are focused on safety as well as justice. So we will look at adding that division, the 10th Division in special prosecutions that take on organized crime. We're going to make sure that we are focusing on carjackings, the gun crimes. We have the division in there already, and the organized retail theft, so that people know that we're focusing on the safety aspects that people see every day, to let them know we're focusing on safety, but maintaining justice. But the other things that we're looking at hate crimes, we're looking at our relationship with law enforcement, and making sure that we are tackling the issues and the problems with our juveniles, especially with recidivism. So we're going to have to sit down, you know, with Juvenile Justice Division and make sure that we're addressing those issues as well. But the first thing we're going to look at is special prosecutions.
There's a lot that people are saying. Look, what do you want to say to folks who are in law enforcement that are, you know, out on the streets doing a job that most of us can't or won't do? And they have had a lot of issues with our current state's attorney. What kind of conversations have you had with the Chicago Police Department? I know that there are officers who do support you. I know that there are a lot who don't. What kind of headway have you made in those conversations with them?
I think one thing that I want to know, and I talk with law enforcement every day, honestly, every day. A lot of my fraternity brothers are either on the job or were on the job, and they have concerns as well with the relationship. And what they need to know is they have someone that supports them for sure, that they have someone coming in that will communicate and collaborate when and where appropriate to ensure that they know that the work that they're doing not only is appreciated, but that we can move forward correctly with these cases. And I think think that therein lies some of the frustration, is that there's a belief that we're not moving forward on cases, period. So when we change that narrative right there and people know that we're working together with the correct policing, then I think that the narrative changes and the morale between the offices change as well. I think it's extremely important to make sure that we're communicating and we understand that where there's some disconnect, that leadership is sitting down with leadership to erase that disconnect.
I know that you have a very tight schedule. These are the last few hours. So in your closing moments, we've got a minute. Use it any way you would like to make your last pitch for state's attorney. We're talking to Clayton Harris III, who's on your ballot for the primary for Cook County State's Attorney. Take it away, sir.
Thank you, Patty. I'm telling everybody, I want you to know that I understand people are scared to come outside or to go downtown or to walk when it's dark. And I'm running for you. I'm running for the people that are worried about taking public transportation because they don't feel safe. I'm running for you, but I'm also running. You know, I'm running for the people that have been pulled over for pretextual traffic stops. I'm running for the business that feels like they have to close up because of smash and grabs and nothing's being done by that, or the organized retail theft. I'm running for you all because we can take care of that. But I'm also running for the workers whose wages have been stolen, or the community that feels like they have to look over their shoulders because of hate. I'm running for us all because we can be safe and just at the same time. I'm a 25-year attorney from Howard grad that is a former prosecutor that has taught at the University of Chicago public policy, that's managed large state agencies, and I'm excited about being the next Cook County State's Attorney. My name is Clayton Harris III. My punch number is 93, and you can check out all of my policies or anything that I've ever said on www.claytonharrisforcook.com.
Go get them, sir. I really appreciate your time. We wish you the very best, as we do with all the candidates. And perhaps we'll check in with you tomorrow. We'll be on the air until no more returns are coming back. So hopefully we can touch base with you tomorrow as well. Wish you the very best, sir. Go get them.
Forward to it. All right.
Thank you.
Feel better. Thanks, Patty.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Pace yourself. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we have another candidate to check in with. We talked to Shell from DeKalb just a few weeks ago, and we want to see how that race is going and remind you, because we don't want to just stay with just Chicago. We'll be covering, of course, tomorrow all the primary returns. It'll be Richard Chu, Tim Hogan, Joe Esposito, and sadly, I won't be there for the pizza, but I'll be broadcasting from home. More in a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal.
Hey there, it's your guy Warren Price from European and U.S. Collision Repair, a division of Technicraft Body Shops. We specialize in automobile and truck repair as well as normal automobile maintenance. With our highly skilled technicians and environmentally friendly materials, we strive for quality. Call 773-248-1200, that's 773-248-1200, or EuropeanUS.com.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez on WCPT 820.
We are in the last few hours before the polls open for the last day of the primary in Illinois. Of course, the early polling places have been open for several weeks. If you have a mail-in ballot, make sure it is postmarked by tomorrow so that you can get your vote in. And joining us from DeKalb is Shell DeYoung, Dunn of DeKalb Dems, running for the DeKalb County Board, District 11. Shell, how's it going these last few hours heading into the primary?
Well, I'm getting excited to see what the numbers are going to look like, because the primary for us is not something that, you know, we're battling other Democrats for. We're just running so that we can run against the two incumbent Republicans. So for us, the campaign really starts after, you know, tomorrow. So what I'm excited about is just to see what our numbers are going to be, because it's been really hard to get a Democrat down here in any kind of a position. So
Oh, good. Wait, you're saying you did pretty well last night?
No, last time. I ran for the same position in the last election 2 years ago, and my numbers were pretty encouraging, which is why I ran again. So now I'm waiting to see what the numbers are like this time.
So for folks who live in DeKalb, let's break down what this role entails and what the responsibilities are, running for the District 11 board.
Right. Well, what I cover a pretty good-sized portion of DeKalb County. from excuse me, southern part of Malta Township and Afton Township and Pierce Township, and it's just like a little slice of those off, all the way down south to Pawpaw Township, most of Sauminock Township where I'm at, and there's a small strip of northern Sandwich Township. Now, that's changed quite a bit because I used to have most of Sandwich, or at least that was the position before they did the redistricting. So the position now has shifted a little bit north and a little bit west. So that's the area that I handle. It includes Chaminade, Waterman, Hinckley, and Earlville, where my running mate is.
So for folks who live in the area, that's the ground that Shell is covering. And I know that you really believe in local government and making changes at that level. You also would be representing a lot of folks who are in farming. Tell us a little bit about how, in that role, you can support family farms.
Well, there's a lot of farmers out in this area who have been struggling, especially with the way the climate change has been happening. And a good deal of farmers are now looking towards doing more sustainable type farming, not overturning their land at the end of fall, letting it just sit, because it's been shown that every time they till, excuse my voice, every time they till, we lose carbon into the air. So there's a lot of farmers who are just starting to get into that. There's a whole program that the DeKalb County Farm Bureau is supporting in terms of sustainable farming, and I very strongly support that. We also have farms that are leasing their land for sustainable energy, and I strongly support that too. We have a good size wind farm in my district, and we're getting a lot of solar farms in the areas as well, and I'm encouraging a lot of farm areas to accept the solar, because that property is not lost. It's, you don't lease it and then it's not usable, because a lot of plants will grow under solar panels that are
right,
harvestable. And so I'm encouraging that type of thing. What I'm really, really focused on is healthcare issues and mental health care issues. So that's my passion, and that's mostly personal. The reason why I'm passionate about those.
Well, with the healthcare issues, how is DeKalb with access to, let's say, emergency room services or maternal health services? Because we're seeing a lot of sort of smaller practices fold or get absorbed by private equity. Are you experiencing those kinds of issues in DeKalb?
Well, we have had Northwestern Medicine come in, and they have our Kishwaukee Hospital up in DeKalb, and here in Sandwich, we have Valley West Hospital. And I must say that the ratings on those two hospitals have just been phenomenal. I can't imagine not going to them if I need to for anything. Both hospitals are just wonderful. And I know that the city of DeKalb itself is very, very interested in making sure that health services are available to everyone in the city, even the parts of the city that are a little less income, lower income than the university. So, we're trying very hard to make sure that there's a lot of equity happening in our county.
Right.
The DeKalb Dems are just extremely community minded.
That's outstanding. What are you hearing from folks when you meet with them and talk about your campaign? What has gotten them fired up? What are they interested in?
Right now, it seems like when I've been talking to them, most of the time, it's been about like the nursing home, because that's been a big thing, and we're still the dust is still settling on that. But that's a lot of the discussion that we hear about. We also hear about the solar panels and not so much the wind farms. I haven't heard, but I have heard a lot about the solar farms and the battles that we're having to fight about that. I'm trying to think of what else we've really discussed. The third thing was the mental health, and again, that's not quite as much. But for me, I keep an ear out for that because that is something that's very special to me, and I have a very personal thing about that. So,
and what would you say? Like, what has kind of what surprised you while you've been running in this campaign? Perhaps compared to the other race that you were in, or just in general? You know, is it meeting people and hearing how enthused they are about, you know, getting a Democrat elected, or what are some of the moments that have caught you off guard and been pleasantly surprised by?
That's definitely one of them. I mean, the change in the attitude, even in my own neighborhood, has been fun to watch. As at first, I was kind of shunned, but that's only because I got very, very much with my signs out in the front lawn. And then there was kind of a grudging acceptance. And now when I talk to people, they're like, they recognize me, and that's kind of bizarre for me. And they're like, wow, you're the Democrat running. Like, you're a strange alien being here in Southern, you know. And it's like, so that's been fun and eye-opening. I didn't think that it was going to make that much of a difference. I was hoping it would, because I'm passionate about this this whole area. I really want to keep the family values going, but not at the expense of other people. And what I'm basically saying in family values is more in terms of being able to have a job, have a house, have your family around you, have food to eat, have the community get together when they need to be getting together, working together, supporting each other. These things are so, so important to me. And that's the thing I'm always trying to get across to everyone, is that I bring a lot behind me, but it's also little bits of this and that. But to me, it gives me a strong foundation and a strong empathy, and I really just want to get out there and help people. And so,
that's what it's all about. We're
So, and when I run into other people that are just going crazy about it, I just love it. I absolutely love it, and I'm seeing it more and more now, and it's so encouraging.
Well, what's your punch number so folks in DeKalb, County District 11, can find you on the ballot tomorrow?
Oh, you know what? I don't know if we have
That's okay.
Punch numbers. It's just our District 11, we have a one-page small ballot because we don't have that many things on there this time. We don't have any referendums or anything. So I'm on the right side of the two-column ballot with Anna Wilhelmi is my running mate for the County District 11 County Board. And then I'm also running as precinct committee person for Sominok. So I'm all on the right side, and then on the left side, right, the federal and things like that. So,
well, we wish you the very best. And again, we've been talking to Shell DeYoung Dunn, who is running for DeKalb County District 11, and as Shell just mentioned, also for the precinct position. So keep that name in mind, and you can go to shellfordekalb.com. That's S-H-E-L-L, the number 4, DeKalb.com, to get more information. Visit the website and help Shell get across the finish line. Thank you so much, Shell. We wish you the very best.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night. And get some rest, too. At least sleep a couple hours before the polls open tomorrow. We are
okay.
Thank you. And before we go to the break, I want to get to Jim. Jim is calling from Chicago. What's on your mind, Jim?
Kenny, I know the therapeutics for this COVID has gotten more reliable. Have you got a prescription for that Paxil? I don't know what it is. I've heard several antidotes for this.
It's pretty mild. I mean, I think that's, you know, just to be safe,
on the safe side, I would maybe have Steve, your husband. I don't know if you could buy him over the counter. You probably got to go through some rigmarole to get it. That's the problem with our healthcare system.
It took me a couple of days because I feel bad because I had a cold. So I treated it like a cold. So I was taking like Mucinex and NyQuil and all that stuff. So I'm feeling okay. Thank you, though. I appreciate it.
Good. I know, but I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it's a precautionary tale. Anyway, what I was going to mention, Putin is celebrating his one side of the election. He had no opponent because he would have had him bumped off or sent to Siberia. But he's threatening World War III. He's already threatened nuclear holocaust several times. And the Republicans are playing footsie with this guy. And I think anybody who considers their vote for a Republican have a litmus test and ask him, what do you intend in the future about Putin? Do you really want World War III? And you're willing to capitulate to this man? Not even Adolf himself. He didn't even say he was going to declare World War II. He did it bit by bit by bit. But this guy's going for the whole enchilada, and that should be a litmus test for all Republicans. That's all I have to say, because
he's
the most dangerous. Most dangerous hombre I ever heard. Anyway, Patty, take care, and a lot of juices, and God bless, buddy. Thank you, dear.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Jim. Let's take a quick break here, because we got to check in with Judge Celia Gamroth when we come back on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal. Another race to keep an eye on.
Hi, this is Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell Choice Hard Seltzer, an all-natural grapefruit-flavored booze that you can enjoy for only 100 calories a can. A percentage of the proceeds of every can of Choice Hard Seltzer you buy goes to reproductive rights organizations in the Chicagoland area. Enjoy a light, refreshing hard seltzer this summer and support reproductive freedom at the same time.
Now available at Dino's Cardinal Liquors in Gurnee, Illinois, and Sugar Beet Food Co-op in Oak Park, as well as in Chicago at Jarvis Square Tavern, Rogers Park, and Garfield's Beverage Express, Wicker Park. Please drink responsibly.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
There's so much that goes on behind closed doors.
On WCPT 820.
I know our next guest has been on hold, and I appreciate her patience. Judge Celia Louise Gamroth joins us. She's been out telling folks that she's ready for the appellate court, and I'm so excited to have you on the show. Hi, Judge. Hi, Your Honor, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Patty. I've got a bit of a campaign voice crisscrossing the county for the last 6 months. Yes. So forgive me, but I'm out and about, feeling strong. Really, really glad to be on this show.
Oh, we're excited to have you. And believe me, I know how it goes. What do you want folks to know about this race and why you feel ready to be on the appellate court?
So this ballot really is about justice. Justice is at stake, and I am the only candidate in my race that has been rated highly qualified, highly recommended by six separate bar associations. I'm the only candidate with firsthand appellate experience, and when I get to the appellate court, I'm going to know exactly what needs to be done because I've worked there. I know the work, I love the work, and quite frankly, I'm really good at it. So I want voters to know this race is important because we can't afford for somebody to come in who's going to take a learning curve. I can hit the ground running, and there's no one that's going to have more passion for this position than I am.
I would love to learn more about you. Where did you grow up, Your Honor?
Sure. So I grew up in the northwest suburbs in Park Ridge. I've lived in the city for 30 years, come from a really close-knit family, not a ton of formal education, but a firm belief that we must lift as we climb. And that phrase is something that we really take to heart in my family about public service, doing good for others and just giving back. And quite frankly, being a judge is the best way I could think of to put to use my skills and really serve the public in the best way I can.
Tell us a little bit about the endorsements that you've received, because I know how important that can be when folks, you know, see a mailer or they hear someone, a candidate like yourself speaking. It does make a difference when someone gives you the stamp of approval. Tell us a little bit about some of the endorsements that you're proud of.
Sure. So I'm really proud. I've got a broad base of support, really diverse groups ranging from the Democratic Party to Citizen Action Illinois, the Chicago Federation of Labor, and the pro-choice organization Personal PAC. I really think I am the consensus candidate, and I've worked hard for those endorsements, but it's really a product of my experience and my qualifications and the shoulders that I stand on every single day who have helped get me to this position, and I am not going to let those shoulders down.
What are some of the issues that people are talking to you about when they, you know, because I think a lot of folks are trying to understand when they get to the judge portion of their ballots. There's a lot of names there. What are they talking to you about? What issues kind of come to mind that they want to know about your experience? What are they worried about, would you say?
Sure. So sorry about that.
That's okay.
Please make a final selection.
Patty, I'm sorry about that. If you could hear, I literally left work. So I'm just going to tell you, I left work, ran over to the polling station in 43.
I was going to say.
I'm at the Lincoln Park Library. They were generous enough to put me in a study room, but that's like the closing bell. But so it's
yeah,
really
folks,
fun
if you have
being
a little, hold
here.
On. Judge, hold on, Judge. If you live in Lincoln Park and you're living near that library, you have 20 minutes to get to the polls right now. We just heard the closing bell for that polling place. Go ahead, Judge.
And they can't close the door on you if you're in line. And what's super exciting is there actually is a line. So we're telling people, use your voice and vote. This is your chance to be heard. And if you want to vote for justice, this is your chance. So you ask me what people are asking me about, and they want to know what we do, what I could promise them. Well, I could never promise somebody what I could do on a case, but I could absolutely promise you that I will remain true to the law. I am prepared. I am knowledgeable about the law, but importantly, I care about equity, fairness, and justice. So if you want to be on the right side of justice, this is your chance to vote for the appellate court judge, and that judge is me, Celia Gamrat.
Okay, Judge, you've got 19 minutes for those folks in line to make your pitch to them. So I appreciate your time. I know you've got to get to them, and your campaign manager probably hates me. So thank you so much for your time. Again, we've been talking to Judge Celia Louise Gamrath. We wish you the best of luck and look forward to talking to you after this race, okay?
Yes. Thanks. Punch 134 for Gamrath. Thanks. Bye.
Absolutely. Be well. Let's take a break here. We're going to switch gears for a few minutes. We've been talking to candidates that are running in races across the Northern Illinois area. We've talked to Clayton Harris III. We've talked to Shell DeYoung Dunn, and we've talked to Judge Celia Louise Gamrath. So let's change it up for a minute and talk to Lori Kilmartin, comedian Lori Kilmartin, who is coming to town to perform in the Den Theater. We'll check in with her when we come back on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez on WCPT 820.
You know, a few weeks ago, we talked to Lori Kilmartin about her upcoming appearance at the Den Theater, and I said, we've got to get her back before that, during that week at least. And then, of course, I was scrolling today and saw Lori and a clip about her son being half Mexican. And I was like, oh my God, Lori, how are you doing?
I'm good, but just to clarify, I'm at the Lincoln Lodge on Wednesday night.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
No
I apologize.
Problem.
I knew you were in Chicago. It's a Lincoln Lodge, which is such a great, it's like a comedy, like it's like a comedy playground. You're going to have such a great time there. It's beautiful and fun and great crowds. Go ahead.
No, I've only heard, like, every Chicago comic I tell, they're like, oh my God, they're going to love it. So I'm super psyched.
Yes. Yes, it's very cool. I was just laughing because I am half Mexican, and I'm often told that I don't look I don't look Mexican. And oh my God, it's just such a brilliant joke to say, let's ask a cop. Oh my God.
Thank you.
Do you ever have that moment where you're like, you see a comic do it? Because, I mean, you're such a great writer and a great performer. But do you still have those moments where you see a comic and you're like, ah, oh, that's the joke? Like, you've had something in the back of your mind. And you're like, ah, oh, it was sitting right in front of me.
Oh, all the time, especially like topics that I don't consider like stage worthy or something. Like, yeah. Say for example, Kate Middleton. I've been obsessing about the royal family for like a week and a half at least. And then I see a comic make a joke on stage. I'm like, oh yeah, my obsession off stage. I forget that I could make jokes about it. I always think, oh, well, it's just me. And so that drives me nuts when I feel like I missed out on an opportunity because I forgot that, you know, maybe other people would be into it. But yeah, all the time. I mean, I frequently envy other people's jokes.
Yeah, I was just okay. Let's live in Kate Middleton territory here for a minute because I haven't talked about it at all on the show, but I got sucked in like starting on Friday, and I, like a lot of women, would say, "Oh my God, did you hear about Kate Middleton?" And of course, my husband is one of those husbands who said, "Who?" And then you have to go through the whole thing. What were your thoughts on seeing that video of President Obama going to the Prime Minister's house? I don't know. Is that today? Is that something that's... What is happening? Is it a new murder mystery series? What?
I don't know. There was this wild theory that Charles is dying and William committed domestic violence. And so they need a new potential king. And so I thought, oh gosh, maybe it's Obama because he does have roots going back to Ireland on his mom's side, and maybe they go back even further. I'm not really sure how far down the line he is, but he'd be a good king.
Right? Okay, so these new pictures that came out that she apparently went to a market, and it is a lot of madness. I mean, how do you not talk about this and become obsessed with it? I mean, I know that there are people who are not, but still, we're in it. I'm in it. I don't know how far deep you are.
It's really... when you said you got to it last Friday, I'm like, 2 months late. This started in January, Patty. How embarrassing.
Okay. It wasn't even Friday. I mean, for a few days, I was looking at the Photoshop picture, right? With the girl who wasn't, the girl who was wearing tights in the fall, and now she has a skirt.
Sorry.
And then the kid with the sweater.
Yeah.
And then, right. Yeah, that's where I got pulled in.
Are you just new to this completely? For God's sake, Patty.
I don't know any of their names. I have no idea. But apparently there was a picture with the queen last year in order to make Meghan feel bad that they weren't going to have the biracial kids in the picture. So that was Photoshopped too, because one of the, like Louis or somebody, wasn't actually there because there was light coming from another source, but he was sitting by a window, but nobody else. That's where I am in all of this.
Oh, yeah. I mean... And I don't want to sound arrogant and put off any potential customers or attendees to my show, but I knew this last year. That was heavily photoshopped.
Good.
Promise I won't be this arrogant at the Lincoln Lodge on Wednesday night. But
you're not being arrogant.
Yeah.
I'm catching up. I'm in. Go ahead.
I think the bigger story for Americans is how brutally Meghan Markle was treated by the same press that is now begging for, gentility for Kate Middleton. And it's really astonishing to see the hypocrisy and to, you know, speculate why. I mean, incredibly racist at a minimum. And also the fact that she was just like a self-made woman and, you know, was a full human being before she even married into the family. And they aren't used to that. They're used to like these, you know, very young women who hadn't really done anything. And then they, you know, become molded. And Meghan had already been molded. So by herself and her life and her circumstances. And so... there's a lot of us that are like super pro Meghan, and just watching all this go down has been really fascinating.
We are talking to Lori Kilmartin. Her new comedy special, Cis Woke Grief Slut, is available on Amazon, Apple TV, YouTube, Vimeo. Follow her on all the social medias. And she's actually how I'm keeping up to date on what's going on with Kate Middleton and the fact that Kate Middleton came out after she delivered all three babies in high heels and was like, that was easy. I rolled off the delivery table. I'm not even, you know, I didn't even have my perineum stitched up. I'm all good. But everyone gave Meghan Markle grief for, right, for recovering as we all should in private, right?
Yeah, right. And she didn't want to like show off the baby like hours after it was born outside. They did like a photo op inside the palace that was a little more tightly controlled. And you know, I can imagine her feeling like people are going to be extra curious about what her child looks like, and she just wants to protect her baby from all that sort of negativity or that curiosity that didn't exist with Kate's kids, you know. So she's a protective mom. She still is. They both are. And oh, please, this could be like a 4-hour soliloquy on the fantastic British media.
But how delicious is it to have this, at least for a little bit of respite from what's going on with politics in America? You know what I mean? Like, it's a nice break. I still heard the words bloodbath in whatever context. I heard bloodbath from a guy who always wants to be violent. Yeah, I mean, I know if we put it in context, maybe it makes sense. Only he's always talked about beating people up and using violence. And, you know, so talking about a Photoshop picture seemed fun for a couple hours is all I'm saying. Right.
It was, and I feel like it united conspiracy theorists on the left and the right. Like, I'm sure yes. I had positive interactions with QAnon during this entire 2.5 weeks. And that's sometimes we Americans need to heal. And if slamming the British monarchy helps us heal, I mean, that's why we exist anyway. So let's go for it.
Absolutely. And I do, I pledge next St. Patrick's Day that I will not use a Mick or O for anything. I will use Gil and Kill for all my prefixes on all things Irish.
I will
Irish it up.
Outrageous, Patty. It's, you know, we're smaller little families, the Gills and the Kills, but we're Irish too. We have a whole county called Kilkenny, and still they always Mick, O. You know, give us a little bit. Our prefix counts as well.
I agree. There's a comedian in Chicago named Joe Kilgallen. I think he would also agree with that completely. And I know that you take out a lot. You take out a lot of things that those who might, you know, look, the title Cis Woke Grief Slut triggers some on the right. And for folks, or maybe on the left, they probably they think that do you get a little bit of folks on the left who are like, I don't really like, I'm not comfortable with using the word slut. That's shaming. Or is it working all around?
I think it's working. The hardest thing is when I give like a comic or an MC is bringing me up and they're like, what's the name of your special? And I'm like, all right, sit down. to me, it's pretty, like, if they haven't watched it or if they don't know me, then it's a lot to, I see eyes blinking and, you know, trying to remember the order and the words. And, you know, I've been called Greek slut several times. I'm not Greek.
Oh my God.
The grief part is, you know, I have a bunch of jokes about my mom who died of COVID and that whole time frame. And then, you know, when I was putting together, I had a social media lady for a couple months, and she's like, you got to get rid of slut. You're going to be designated as porn, which would be an honor. Ooh. But I don't think it happened. I think the algorithm rhythm is used to maybe the word slut not being used in terms of like pornography or something. So I don't know. But I don't know. I don't know how to read this stuff.
I don't either. We're talking to Lori Kilmartin. She's going to be headlining at the Lincoln Lodge this Wednesday. It's right, March 20th, right? I got that. Hopefully I got that right.
That's right. I'm coming in on a Tuesday night. And yeah, so, and my son's coming with me. We're going to go check out the Art Institute before the show and do as much Chicago as we can in one day. Yeah.
They have a, if it's still there, they had a special exhibit of Picasso's, like some of his early work and drawings and sketches and things like that. It's really a great exhibit in the modern wing.
Wow.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. And by the way, Laura, you mentioned something about the MC kind of giving you a wide-eyed look. You mentioned something in one of your tweets, I think it was today, about we have these social media stars who are now headlining clubs without the experience of making it there. And part of that growth is being the MC who knows how to do the job of doing a good introduction, don't you think? I mean, that's part of the growth curve.
Yeah, I mean, every step of becoming a headlining comic is hard and grueling, but it gives you the stage time you need to develop your persona. And to be able to be like that in front of people, in front of strangers. So it seems like a lot of to headlining via social media, like within the last two or three years. I mean, yeah, you can talk for an hour, but that's, believe me, and you know this as well, to actually become a good hour-long comic is at least a decade minimum of constant stage time. And so it's weird how things are shifting now where, you know, you, a regular, you know, audience member might just go to a show and not realize this person, you know, just started on TikTok during COVID. And so they just don't have the chops that like a regular hardened stage stand-up would have, you know?
Yeah, I do. I am so sad that I won't see you on Wednesday, and it's for a reason that you're very passionate about. I have to stay away from you. I tested positive for COVID yesterday, and this is something that you talk a lot about. I know, and people pretend like it's not there. And I, you know, I'm not diligent enough to wear my mask all the time. I wear it like on the train and when I fly and things like that. But I let my guard down. I feel okay, but you're absolutely right that this is not over. That people are still getting sick, and I could carry it to somebody who maybe is vulnerable. And so, I'm sorry, I won't be able to see you this week because I'm in my bedroom broadcasting right now. It's so bad.
Well, I hope you can rest. What they say, you should rest more than you think you need to, just so it doesn't develop into long COVID. I bring an air purifier to my show. It's right underneath me, blowing clean air into my face. And, you know, I do whatever I can, and so far so good. But, you know, any day could test positive, just like any of us. So,
yeah, I'm just grateful that you keep reminding folks of that, and I need to do the same. And that's what I'm telling folks right now. Be diligent. It's not only about you; it's about the people around you. And look, we also want to gather and have a good time. I just won't be able to see you this Wednesday. I would have otherwise. Laurie Kilmartin is going to be at the Lincoln Lodge this Wednesday. The show is at 7:00. You can go to lauriekilmartin.com. There's a link right there for the tour dates to get tickets to learn more about the venue. I'm so sad I won't get to see you this time that you're in town. But the next time, I'm not going to let you come into town again without getting to see you, I promise.
Heck yeah. Well, stay safe, Daddy.
You too. And by the way, I don't believe that's her in the video. She doesn't walk like she's walking so fast. Anyway, all right.
Yeah. I got it.
I'm not buying it. Laurie Kilmartin, it's always great to talk to you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Safe travels and enjoy Chicago.
See you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's take a break here. We're going to check in with our friends from the Going Home Coalition. We've got a comedy show coming up, thankfully, virtually this Thursday. So I will get to perform for that show. So let's check in with them when we come back on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal.
Driving it home with Patty Vasquez, Patty Vasquez.
From global conflicts to greenhouse gases, the folks refusing to wear masks, says, and politicians getting caught grabbing asses. She's driving it home with Patty Vasquez.
Hello, hello, and thank you so much for joining us. We want to say hi to our friends listening in Minneapolis, St. Paul on KTNF 950 AM and in the surrounding areas. I know we reach so much of the Midwest, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan. It's always great when I'm out talking to folks and meeting them and hearing about what they enjoy on the show. And they often say, I don't get a chance to see your comedy shows. Fortunately, tonight and Thursday night, there are virtual comedy shows for you to enjoy. And we want to talk about Thursday's comedy show. The Going Home Coalition is having a comedy show that I'm so excited to be a part of. And Carol Rosen, the Going Home Coalition manager, joins us. Hey, Carol, how are you doing today?
Hey, Patty, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I have told folks that I have tested positive for COVID. I am being very careful and staying home. I'm quarantining so that my family doesn't get sick. And here's the thing. This is actually for you and for me and our families. This is what has been so hard in the wake of the pandemic, and obviously at the height of the pandemic, was trying to explain to folks how important it is for our families to make sure that our loved ones are safe, because Declan isn't necessarily going to wear a mask. We do have him vaccinated, but our family members can be vulnerable to a pandemic, to illnesses that maybe other people don't take as seriously, right?
Right. And you could be my daughter, who does still wear a mask at school and still ended up COVID positive recently. So, and it's really scary because, right, you never know where that's going to head. And fortunately, the two times she's had COVID, she's really weathered it out even better than I did. But it's really frightening. And I think, you know, people who are masking are just a little bit unfamiliar to us now. And I think we just have to be respectful and understand that there's way more to than meets the eye in people's lives and their family lives and why they're doing that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I got into an argument. I tried very hard not to get into an altercation with somebody who was yelling at me at an event. I was the only person in the room wearing a mask. And I don't want to have that argument that Declan, you know, he can't protect himself. You know, for him, he can't clear his airways or even cough up, like when he has, that kind of any sort of an illness with his sinuses. It's very hard. And you know, look, we are in environments for our kids, whether it's a living facility or at school, that just there's a little extra work for us, isn't there?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I 100% agree. And I was kind of thinking, you know, we could talk about the nuts and bolts about why we do what we do with Going Home Coalition. But I really want to say again, you know, there's so much behind what parents go through when they have a child with, you know, medical fragility or intellectual and developmental disabilities. And the bar and just becomes so much higher with the day-to-day caution and tasks that need to be done. And so when I thought of meeting with you again tonight, I was like, you are an example. I am an example of how hard parents have to work out of necessity just to get the bar close to normal.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was my muscles all tensed up because there will never be a normal. There's so many things that we have. I just saw a TikTok video. I was scrolling. I'll be honest, Carol. I don't know if you saw this. There was a judge who had the 96 year old father who was driving his son for blood work. Did you see that one?
Oh no, he has Down syndrome. Wonderful woman. But okay, go ahead. 96.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's a great video. Oh, you talk about that one too. But there's a 96 year old father who was in court because he had violated a school zone speed limit. And he was telling the judge, I don't drive very fast. I'm 96. I was just taking my disabled son for blood work. And his son is 63. And I was thinking about, I mean, like there is, you know, when we think about our, you know, whether it's our retirement or our later years in life, it's not the same as other families who plan for their retirement at all. Let's talk a little bit about that and what that looks like for us, because it's unique for every family. But again, to your point about, you know, get that anywhere close to normal is not feasible for us. And we're trying to find ways that our kids are safe, right?
And I looped back. I 100% agree with you. You and I, you know, other families like ours have unique set of circumstance that our kids are not going to be working. They're not going to be living in their own apartment. You know, this is part of the system that it's really hard, if not impossible, to accommodate adult children like ours. It's really complex. And my heart breaks when I hear that, because all people want is to have the support that they need in a circle of support. And when your child has complex disabilities, if they're intellectual, if they're developmental, it's really hard not to feel isolated. And then when you look at those retirement years, not only have you spent, you know, a great deal more of your finances just taking care of your child's day-to-day expenses and needs, it really impacts your ability to even retire and the amount that you'll need to even be able to live your ending, you know, your years in any kind of lifestyle that you ever anticipated. So it's really concerning.
Exactly. It really is. So, for folks who don't know too much about Going Home Coalition, there's organizations and members who serve more than 30,000 people. You want to talk a little bit about the structure of Going Home. Fill folks in about some of the things that they should know about the work that you do.
Okay, so thank you. I will do that right now. We are an organization that is made up of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and we often call them self-advocates. We're made up of parents or loved ones who support family members who have intellectual and developmental disabilities. We have service providers. We have advocacy organizations like Equip for Equality, Centers for Independent Living like Access Living. We have ACLU coming. And so it's really blossomed into this group that really wants the same thing, which is that people in Illinois to have options and robust services so that they can exercise their rights to live in the community. And where that ties into Going Home Coalition is that we want to support things like direct service professionals getting living wages so that they can choose taking care of people, you know, and supporting them with intellectual and developmental disabilities in a way that will give them a living wage. We want people to have access to accessible and affordable and integrated housing options because there are not a lot of options for people with ED. We want people to have access to medical services that they need and dental services. You can wait up to 2 years for emergency dental services, and that doesn't work. We want people to have access to waiver funding. In, you know, right now it's up to 4 years to get any kind of waiver funding. We also want people to have the funding that they need so that they continue their lives in the community versus being, you know, funneled into a more restrictive setting, such as a state-operated developmental center or an intermediate care facility for developmental disabilities. These are far more restrictive settings. They cost Illinois taxpayers a fortune, and they are very oftentimes, like, ethically, there are cases of neglect and abuse in them as well that are very concerning. So we want people in the community living full lives.
There was a conversation during Joan Esposito's show just before we started with David Hochberg talking about, you know, folks who are retired and maybe want to be able to have the ability to live in their own homes and have the support services there. And it does kind of cross out those lines. I mean, not everyone wants to live in a retirement community or an assisted living. We want folks to live as independently. And that means, you know, there are some supports that Declan would obviously need. I don't know if you've ever heard of this thing, and I found a dream scenario for me, at least. I don't know where we are in the United States, but there are dementia villages in the Netherlands. Have you heard of this?
Absolutely.
That's a much different conversation. But I know that there are people who talk about, you know, when they get older, the ability to live, you know, as seniors with their adult children. Are there sort of models for that in Illinois where, you know, we could live in a senior community with our adult child that you know of that also needs supports as we all get older?
It's interesting that you're raising that because there are some permanent supportive housing. There's some permanent supportive housing that's taking place that combines a senior population that also has people with developmental disabilities that are seeking housing. So there's that. But there's really innovative models that are happening all over the country. So nothing is leaping to mind, but that's, I wasn't focused on it, and I apologize. But there's definitely... There are definitely communities that have, you know, family-oriented, that have people with their loved ones or people that they are supporting who have DD. There's really interesting things happening all over the country. Maybe that's another thing we could come back and talk about, like innovative housing models for people with DD. I'd be happy to do that.
Well, I know right now, one of the things that we are focused on is elevating this to the folks in Springfield, including the governor. Where are we on any movement there and getting the sort of urgency that families like ours need in addressing these situations?
Well, you know, that's another reason Going Home Coalition advocates. We really need to make sure that we are, you know, budget line item that will help support support professionals who work with BD and to robustly fund labor and options and housing options for people. And it's this big kind of issues that are all tied into themselves, like on each other. And what happens is there's just this whole synergy in the system. So there's some progress that has been made. Like, people were waiting longer than, you know, they were waiting years for services. Now, if you get the home and community-based service, it can take you up to 4 years. But now people who have actually been awarded home and community-based services are not able to find their self-directed assistant to even help them manage their funding. So it gets really confusing, and it's a difficult system to navigate. The Arc of Illinois is one of the best state resources on helping families throughout their lifetime, and there's so many programs that really walk people through what are you looking for when. So I want to throw that out there, too. But the more I get involved in this, the more complex I see it. It's this holistic and organic situation. So there's no easy fix, but we do need more investment by the governor into the DD system. That is for sure.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is that we, you know, one of the reasons I ran for office a few years ago is it takes often in elevating an issue is to have somebody who has a lived experience. But we do have legislators that are working on this. I know that Senator Murphy, amongst others, has been carrying the banner of whether it's trying to make sure that caregivers are really getting the compensation they deserve, that services for our families are being addressed. But it's going to take a lot more than that. We need everybody to ring the alarm bell, don't we? Even if you don't have, I mean, just hearing us, it affects every community. Well, Carol, go ahead.
It does affect every community because, you know, communities strengthen through diversity and inclusion. I do hear, you know, people, legislators who are interested in addressing DD families or to DD issues. For example, I was at an event this weekend in Gurnee, and State Senator Mary Edley Allen was there, and State Representative Laura Favre-Diaz, and also State Representative Joyce Mason's team. And so they, the two people that organized it, who one of whom was a parent and one who was another person who worked at one of the individual service coordinators, gathered all these people so that these resources, we could learn about what each of us is doing. And it was a really thoughtful example of how legislators do want to learn from people within, you know, BD, people who have family members with BD, and all kinds of people in the developmental disabilities community. So there needs to be more education on that.
Yeah, we definitely need more education on that. And it's why I want to keep having these conversations so that, you know, let folks know about your child. What's your daughter's name again?
My daughter is 21. Her name is Hayden. Uh-huh. She had a birth injury, perfect pregnancy birth injury, and she has incredibly complex disabilities. She has global developmental delays. She's nonverbal and non-ambulatory. She has seizure disorder. She has scoliosis, and it's really a handful. But the example I want to make of that is she's a blessing in our life. We are fortunate that we have some help. Like, it's not as much as we definitely need, and there's a whole other story behind that. But what I do want to say is that she has lived in the community for 21 years, so there's no reason that the case can't be argued that she has a wonderful ties to the community, and she is supported in the community. So to tell me that she belongs in an institution or a more restrictive setting just doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree. So for folks who aren't familiar with my son, Declan, who is 18 years old, he, in utero, they discovered there might be some complications, but they thought everything was going to be okay. The complications were they realized that there was low water in the, you know, prior to the delivery. And then when he was born, he was not breathing on his own. And they later discovered he was missing part of his corpus callosum. And similar to Carol's story, Declan has developmental global delays across the board. And exactly like Carol said, he is amazing. He's made my world a much bigger place. And for parents like me and Carol, we've found the place to help fight for other families, because so many of our families don't necessarily. I mean, it's not like we have a lobby that's as powerful as the banking industry or the you know, the gambling industry. Or so it takes a lot of work. And we ask for folks to, you know, even just joining us for a comedy show. We are having a comedy show this Thursday. Where can folks get information for tickets?
We can loop it back onto the Facebook page and go to the Arc of Illinois website, and that is arcofil.org, and there'll be a pop-down menu, or you can go into the events tab, and it's this Thursday, so that's coming up in a hurry, and that's at 7:30 CT. So if you need to make that translation for a different time zone, please keep that in mind. And it's virtual, so really people can join from anywhere and are. So there's massive talent that'll be performing for sure. And so it's a great occasion to have a giggle and enjoy a nice evening.
Yep, you can send
make a look difference. Folks,
exactly. You can make a difference, and right from the comfort of your own home. We're talking to Carol Rose and the manager for Going Home Coalition. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. If anyone has any questions, you can text or call us at 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-9278. We'll take a break here. We'll be right back with Carol Rose from Going Home Coalition on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal and KTNF 950 AM Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Hey there, it's your guy, Warren Price, from European and U.S. Collision Repair, a division of Technicraft Body Shops. We specialize in automobile and truck repair, as well as normal automobile maintenance. With our highly skilled technicians and environmentally friendly materials, we strive for quality. Call 773-248-1200. That's 773-248-1200 or EuropeanUS.com.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
In your communities in Chicago.
On WCPT 820.
And we are on the air with our friend Carol Rosen, the manager of the Going Home Coalition. We have a comedy show coming up this Thursday. And after the 6:30 break, in just a few minutes, we're going to check in with one of the comics. Is it Tina from, I probably should ask how to pronounce her name, Carol. Is it Tina Frimmel?
I believe says it's Frimmel. I think she says Frimmel. And she'll tell you when she's done. Yep. But I'm so excited.
Excellent.
So, thank you, Patty. I appreciate everything you're helping with. It's awesome.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm sorry that we couldn't be in studio today, just trying to be safe for everyone's sake, because I have tested positive for COVID, folks. Be careful out there. Continue to be vigilant. But Carol, for folks who aren't familiar with the work, again, that you guys do at Going Home Coalition, let's talk a little bit about how folks can get involved, how they can be allies in this, in trying to make sure that we have a safe future for our kids.
You can do a few things. One is you could, and I can drop these on the your Facebook page also. We have a Facebook page. You can like us and follow us. That's awesome. You can get involved with the coalition. I will put our website down. It's goinghomeillinois.org. And on there, there's a tab that says join us. And we are really interested in allies. And you do not have to be someone who has, you know, who has a developmental disability or is a parent or a service provider. We really want to create the opportunity for people from all different parts of community at large to get involved with, you know, making community a better place and giving people the rights that they're entitled to. That's really what's important. So that would be a great way to get involved in us. We have really interesting meetings, if I don't say so myself. We talk with people like Equip for Equality. We talk with the Office of the Inspector General. We have spoken with Senator Julie Morrison about DSP wage increase. Actually, next week, we'll be speaking with Chief Homelessness Officer Christine Haley from the governor's office. And we're also hoping in April to circle back with Illinois Department of Public Health and Developmental Disabilities. So I know I'm botching that up, but IDPH and DDD. So there's great ways
to get involved. You're also right. You're also teaching people how to advocate, which I think is an incredible thing.
Yeah, we're doing these amazing legislative advocacy modules right now. That happens Thursdays at 10:30 in the morning, and these include lots of different conversations about people just don't really know how to do this. And so I usually have a self-advocate co-presenter. We do anything about voting and voting registration and education, and that's through our grant with RevUp, the American Association of People with Disabilities. We teach people how to look up their legislators. We teach people how to write their elevator speech. We will personally connect you with your legislator if you're having a hard time making an appointment. We're going to be doing something on discussing politics with civility, how to become an election, a poll worker in Illinois elections. So there's great topics. So those are available too, and also recorded if you have missed them or don't think you can make them but want to check in.
So everyone, go. These are great skills to learn for advocating for individuals with disabilities, as well as advocating for the things that you believe in. We talk about how local electeds have such a direct impact on your everyday life. So go to goinghomeillinois.org to learn more about all the great work that they do. Carol, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back in just a few minutes with one of the comedians, our headliner, I believe. Is she headlining the show on Thursday? Yes, yeah. We have Tina Frimmel's going to join us in just a few moments. And again, the comedy show is this Thursday at 7:30. You can go to the Facebook page for the Going Home Coalition. And we're very excited to do this show. It's going to be me, Pamela Schuler, and the headliner, Tina Frimmel, who's going to join us in just a moment on WCPT 820 Heartland Signal and KTNF 950 AM Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Hi, this is Kirk Bankstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company, and I sell Choice Hard Seltzer, an all-natural grapefruit-flavored booze that you can enjoy for only 100 calories a can. Percentage of the proceeds of every can of Choice Hard Seltzer you buy goes to reproductive rights organizations in the Chicagoland area. Enjoy a light, refreshing hard seltzer this summer and support reproductive freedom at the same time.
Buy yours at Beer on the Wall, Arlington Heights, Woodman's in Bloomingdale, Kenwood Liquors in Homer Glen, and more to come. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
You're listening to Driving It Home with Patty Vasquez.
There's so much that goes on behind closed doors
on WCPT 820.
But there won't be comedy behind closed doors. See what I did there? I'm being silly. We have been talking to Carol Rosen, the manager of the Going Home Coalition, and she has invited me and Pamela Schuler, and our guest on the phone with us, Tina Frimmel, joins us. Tina, am I saying your last name correctly, first of all?
You are. I'm really impressed.
Well, tell everybody else who I butcher their names that you were impressed, because I was asking Carol. So to be fair, Carol shared the correct pronunciation. So thank you for that, Carol.
No worries.
Anything for Tina and you.
Excellent. So Tina, I was just watching your video of celebrating St. Patrick's Day. You were out with some comedians. Where in the world are you joining us from right now?
Well, right now I'm just sitting there in my homeland in Brooklyn. I live way out in Brooklyn, but when I told that joke, I was actually in my hometown, Burlington, Vermont, where I grew up, and I was in the main downtown area, very picturesque.
It looks beautiful, and you were telling a story about being out drinking. Now, what is your take on Guinness? What is it? It's the drink of the Irish.
Okay. So, basically what happened was I was out in London in my early 20s, bar hopping with some comedians, and to try and impress this guy, I ordered a Guinness, and it worked. He saw me get this Guinness, and he was like, "Ooh, wow, cool!" And that was my, I just said, you're going to love the Guinness. And I sipped it, and it was just the, like, most awful. Like, I'm going to post it as a story. I was told that where I went wrong was that I got it in a can. Apparently you never get it in a can. So,
no.
But, I mean, if that had to happen, I'm glad it was in a can because I couldn't even drink half of it. So.
Well, you're living a parallel life to a rom-com.
That's right.
I just saw that she does that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Tina, because my first time having Guinness, I didn't like it either. But I get some people say it's an acquired taste. But my thing is, if you have to acquire it, why booze shouldn't be work, should it, Tina?
Yes. I know, we're off the clock. We should need to earn anyway. Yeah. I know my mom, when she was younger, she lived out in Edinburgh for a semester, and she likes Guinness. She told me, like, oh, no, Guinness is good. You just have to, like, sip it more and more. It gets better with every time you go back to it. Like, every second. And, of course, I'm thinking, well, is that the case, or are you just getting drunker? Like, Mom?
Right? Exactly. Yeah, go ahead.
I definitely want to say, like, I know enough people that genuinely love Guinness that, like, I'm totally there. I'm just the wimp. can't get into it. I don't know. I'll take a cider for me.
Well, I never get people who, like, get mad at you for not liking what they like. Like, how does that affect your love of something? Whether it's, you know, Guinness or music or a movie. Like, what harm does it do for Tina to say she doesn't like Guinness at all? Like, right? I mean, why people get mad at that?
Yeah, I mean, I worry that there will be some kind of, like, dramatic backlash on that video. Guinness lovers will come out of the woodwork, you know, but thankfully, I mean, lots of people commented that, like, I love Guinness, but what, to each their own, more Guinness for
exactly.
Guinness.
They could offer you a sponsorship and convert you and watch the progression of
right?
If you like Guinness.
No, just start campaigns. Guinness could just start campaigns to, like, slowly get Tina from to admit that Guinness is not a bad mission.
we'll drink Guinness for money. I think we all would.
Oh,
I love that.
100% would.
Where will you be on Thursday? So, because have you done a lot of these virtual shows? Because on Thursday, I'll probably be in my bedroom during our virtual comedy show and trying to make it look clean. Have you done a lot of virtual comedy shows in the last few years?
A small handful. And the funny thing is, I always tend to have them in different places. I've never had a virtual show in the same place twice.
No.
And, but I think I'll just probably have it right where I am right now, just in my little tiny shoebox with an office, and I'll decorate it so it looks like I actually live here.
We are so appreciative, Tina, so thank you.
You
and Kimla and Patty.
So
appreciative. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. It's my pleasure.
Well, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. I know that you've appeared. We've seen you on Comedy Central. We've seen you on Jimmy Fallon. I think that you no matter how much exposure you get on shows like that, you have to keep reintroducing yourself, don't you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. I hope that years down the line it will be different. But really, right now, I don't mind it at all. But you're right that I do, you know, every time I get up on stage, whether it's on TV or I work a lot at the Comedy Cellar, which is a very big club out here in New York, very popular. And every time I get on there, I open with saying, "Hi, I'm Tina. I'm disabled. Don't worry, you're going to be okay."
Well, are you going to be back in Chicago soon?
Oh, I hope so. I was in Chicago back in, I guess, like late November on a Tuesday. Yep. For one day, I did Zany's Comedy Club, and it was so there. Fun. We sold out. It was just the best time. Super cold Tuesday, I remember. So we just hauled in there. And went out in talks with Zany again to kind of get me back on the books. Maybe good. In the fall. That'd be cool.
Nice.
I love Chicago. That would...
And it won't be, hopefully in the fall, it won't be nearly as cold. We are having very erratic weather in Chicago. We've had like 70-degree weather in January and February. Have you run into some strange weather patterns on your travels?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just got off about 2 weeks where I was bopping kind of all over the place. I was down south in Atlanta, New Orleans, Houston, Nashville area. And, of course, that was odd because I'd never really been down south before. And I thought it would be hotter than it was. That would be, you know, decent weather, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
But then I shot up to Grand Rapids in Michigan and did Grand Rapids in Detroit, and there we had great. It was so hot because we had really nice weather. Except for one afternoon, it snowed.
Right? Yeah, the weather has been crazy.
And then I come back here to New York, and people are out here wearing, people are now here wearing T-shirts. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. You mentioned that when you go up at the comedy clubs, you'll tell the audience, "I'm disabled, but you'll be okay." Do you feel like people are getting a little bit better on how they stare? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you notice that people are staring and then, like, catching themselves? Because that's what I see a lot of is, like, people.
Yeah.
They don't realize that they're staring until they are, you know, until sometimes we say something. Don't you think?
Yeah, and, you know, where I'm at in my life, I mean, after 30 years of experience as a disabled person, which is a weird way to say it, but I've picked up on kind of micro expressions that people have. So
yeah.
Even now, it's sort of like people, when they notice it and they're kind of caught off guard, but they want to hide it because they, you know, they don't at all want to make it seem like they're uncomfortable. But, you know, I'm so well versed at this point. I can pick up on those micro expressions, and I mean, it's okay. I know that I catch people off guard a lot. And
right.
I love that.
The reason why, the reason why comedy is so life-changing to me was before, in the first 2 decades of my life, it really bothered me how different it was, and it bothered me the reaction I would get. But now, through comedy, I've grown into it, and said, "Well, yeah, I'm unforgettable."
Exactly.
You know, and I'd much rather that than you know, go be ignored. Maybe being a little bit too philosophical about it.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
It makes funny.
Exactly.
You shouldn't have to hide your funny. And I appreciate you leveling the playing field. And, like, you know, I was at that show at Zany's. You definitely hit some pain points for people, and they loved it. Like, they just loved it. And I think it's really important. And I think, there was a lot of people from Vermont, actually, in that audience at Zany's in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I think people really learn from you, and you know, and I think it's great. I appreciate you. I appreciate Pamela. I appreciate Patty all sharing their stories. I mean, it's just amazing. So, thank you again.
People, when it comes to stuff like that, people are a little bit masochistic. They love being kind of indirectly called out. And I say indirectly in that I'm never going up shaming people for feeling uncomfortable. I never would, because I get it. I don't totally get what you know, that they're kind of caught off guard. But I think people like being called out when you say something that allows them to kind of call themselves out, or
right.
You simply say something that notifies them that you're aware of what they're thinking right now. you've heard it all, basically.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Is like, so my son Declan is was born without like the midline of his brain, right? And it took me a long time to feel comfortable, because people have questions. I think that's the weirdest thing, is that they think that your privacy is less important than their curiosity, which is where I think for me I had to start talking about Declan on stage. Yeah, isn't that the weirdest thing? Like when someone says to me, "What's wrong with your son?" I tell them he's missing a part of his brain. How about yourself? So I, in contrast to you, don't mind shaming people in the moment, because I'm tired. I'll tell you the truth, Tina. I get tired.
Yeah,
I think one of the funniest things you did at Zany's was you were telling the story of your birth. And I mean, I can't recount it enough, and I know we don't have time, but it was so great. Tina's timing, and she just kind of like tortured people with her story. And she pulled into it and pulled out of it. And then it was genius. So I hope people get this. Hear that.
That's absolutely, it definitely gets pretty challenging. In there, and we pull through it every time, and I mean it's great. I've gotten so much great feedback just on that part of the show. People have told me that like. They're like, "Oh, I loved it. I felt like I'm being torn open." Just by how it was dark, it was uncomfortable, it was, and then you say something that was so undeniably humorous and so uncalled for in the best way. And it, you know, that whole, you know, part of the show that I had, that part about my traumatic birth and how I became disabled, I wrote that because I've been doing comedy for a few years at that point, and my birth story was always something very, very touching to me. And so my, you know, my family and everyone basically was kind of like that black corner that you don't look into. And the day came where I kind of thought back to something that my old college professor said. I took a memoir writing course in college, and my professor told us when we were trying to pick the subject of what we wanted to write our mini memoir about in that class. And I remember she said once, okay, of all the things, I know you're thinking about all the things in your life that you could write a memoir about, but that thing that you really don't want to go into, you know, that thing, the thing that just popped into your mind when I said that thing, that's what you...
Uh-oh. Tina, did we lose you? Oh no! We should have told us the thing! I think it was about her birth. Oh, that, yeah. What a good cliffhanger that was. That was Tina Frimmel. You had to get the rest of this. Yeah, you had to get the rest of the story on Thursday. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, we were talking. Exactly. I love
okay, great.
You.
There's Tina. That was that was so dramatic.
Oh my god!
That was so funny. The thing that you don't want to write about—that's the thing you had to write about. Was your professor was telling you?
That's the thing. Yeah, you know, I hung up the phone for a dramatic system.
It was impressive. Tina, you have such a great Instagram. All your posts are just so much fun and dynamic. It looks like you have a lot of fun traveling and performing. What has been your favorite city to travel to?
Ooh.
Because I know you were just in New Orleans. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago was actually very cool. I went around the corner to the old ale house.
Nice.
All the people from Second City apparently would come to. That was very unique. Very unique, but geez, well, you know, man, you know,
Have you started traveling internationally too?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that London's coming up. Berlin is coming up. I love this.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
Those are going to be my first international shows. So I have London in October. Both of them are in October. London and Berlin in Germany. And
nice.
We're getting a great reaction. Great, people are buying tickets and we're kind of on our way to selling out. So me and my team are already kind of thinking about expanding elsewhere in Europe.
That's fantastic. And you can find Tina's tour dates for folks who want to check her out. I know that she's got Philadelphia coming up at the end of this month, North Carolina coming up in April. And for our friends that are in Missouri, she'll be in Missouri in May, Kansas City and St. Louis. So find Tina Frimmel on Instagram. That's FRIML. And she'll be on our show this Thursday. We have this great Going Home Coalition comedy show. You can go to the Going Home Coalition Facebook page to get your tickets. The show is at 7:30. I'll be hosting, and Pamela Schuler will be joining us as well. Tina, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time and great conversation.
Thank
I look
you.
Forward to performing with you on Thursday. And thank you, Carol, for joining us as
thank
well.
Thank you guys
and,
so much. So appreciative.
Thank you. I think we're good.
I'm so excited.
It's going to be a great show. Thank you for joining us tonight and for doing the show for going home. It's going to be a great event. Thank you both so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think I can wrap up here. I'm sort of early and late. I'm late for my break, but I'm early for the end of the show. So I think it times out. All right, Paul, is that right? Are we all good? Let's do it. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Paul, back at the studios. I'll be back here for primary night tomorrow. We've got Richard Chu and Joan Esposito and Tim Hogan with all of your primary night coverage. Have a great night, everybody. Devil's Advocates are up next.